Kevin, if you would just repeat, just tell me your name and date of birth.
Kevin L. Lowney, 5'9".
Can you move that a little bit closer for me, Hunter?
Yep.
Can you try that again, Kevin, please?
Kevin L. Lowney, 1959.
Okay.
So this...
All the way to the front.
Yep. So this is Kevin talking us through his folder of images and photographs. And it's December 22nd, 2010, and we're at the Butte radio station at Montana Tech, which is
KMSM-FM.
KMSM-FM. All right, go ahead again.
Okay, well, this first photograph on the front of the book is myself, Kevin Lowney, and Tony Bennett. That was back in 1990, I believe it was. This was a professor, ex-professor of mine at the University of San Diego, got me involved with Habitat for Humanity of Tijuana, San Diego. He was the founding president of that sector of Habitat. And I was able to hook up with Tony Bennett, good Democrat, and we displayed our artwork for a month at Simic Galleries in La Jolla, California. He goes by Antonio Benedito when he paints. And I did a painting of the work site down there. And then we put on a concert together in La Jolla at the Hyatt Regency. And total from all the proceeds for the month, we raised $500,000 for Habitat for Humanity. We spent $250,000 on the American side of the border, putting up 10 homes, and $250,000 on the Tijuana side of the border. We put up 100 homes.
Fantastic.
We had 3,000 volunteers come down and live in a tent city.
And that lasted how long, the month?
No, it actually, well, the selling of the artwork and the raising of the funds lasted a month. The construction took place in 1 week.
Wow.
And I watched Jimmy Carter here work himself 12 hours a day on the construction site. Very hard work. This was, you know, after he was president. He was getting a little bit older by then, so
yeah.
Very impressed by that. This photograph is in the lunch tent down in Tijuana, where we had a tent city set up. 3,000 volunteers came from all over the world, but all over the United States primarily, to construct these houses.
Fantastic.
And of course I'm standing next to him there. And then open this up. I just put a lot of different things together that I had. This is a been on our family for years, from the Ancient Order of Hibernians, early Butte history, and it's part of the third degree ceremony.
And you thought that this document dated from the early 1900s?
I believe it came from about 1910 in Centerville.
Let me just read a couple of the titles for the
sure.
oral recording here. So this includes some kind of an opening lyric, it's followed by the salute to the shamrock, the initiation ode first degree, initiation ode second degree, initiation ode third degree, and the closing ode is God Save Ireland.
God save Ireland, says the heroes. God save Ireland, says us all.
Don't stop now.
Oh, no, no. How about if we just do the Irish National Anthem?
Go for it.
Shinna Fina Fall, a Taffy Allegeren, Wind a Schlor, a Tinna Rani Koi, Vee Void Versier, Shanti a Shin, She Faster, Niall Fast, Quintrir a Laur, Vintroil, A Nod a Hains a Buan a Boil, Lagani Quaken Bash no Sail, Lagani Scrave, We lower of live, shall a conic a ron of ear.
Beautiful. Well done.
Thank you. And this is my daughter, Kelly. She's my Irish princess. She's actually now, she'll be 17 years old on March 22nd. And she's sings as well, and that's her love in life, is singing. And I keep trying to convince her she needs a backup plan.
Yeah. And you have another daughter, too?
I have a daughter named Sarah.
What age is Sarah?
Sarah's 28. And she's my other Irish princess. Sarah, of course, means princess. And she lives out in Pullman, Washington at the time.
Yeah.
This time. And then my son, Sean, is 26. And he lives out in Longview, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah works in a grocery store, going to college out there. And Sean is working on his college degree as well.
Yeah, good for them. And is Kelly here in Butte?
Well, Kelly is actually down in Riverside, California, with her mom.
Right, yeah.
And she wasn't here in Butte up till about a year ago.
She's very beautiful.
She is. And, of course, this is, probably recognize it, Allie Hees.
Yes.
That's me taking a little nap under the Aaron Gobras sign.
Do you play the Baron?
I do play the Baron.
Oh, I love the Baron. I'll have to get you to play it for me sometime.
Sure, no problem. And this is kind of my family's lineage that I put together here, and I took it way, way, way back.
And 1700 BC?
1700
BC. That's where
you're
starting. That's very impressive.
and anyway, it comes through the whole history of our family, which I imagine we're going to get into that in the interview part.
Yes, yes.
So I won't go into it now. I'm just showing you some things that are in the book.
Yeah, yeah,
this is my brother, Father Jerry Lowney, or as I like to call him, the Monsignor.
And is he, you've written there next to it, he was at Carroll College, is he still there?
He teaches at Carroll. He's 70 years old. He's just going to be retiring this year.
Yeah.
Teaches sociology. Takes classes to Ireland every year, teaching them the criminal justice system over there and teaching the Irish. He's an expert on alcohol and drug rehabilitation.
Good for him.
And I always tease him. I say, Jerry, you know, you're going to Ireland to teach the Irish about alcoholism? that's just me and my son, Sean, on the backside. And this is just more information on our genealogy here.
Oh, my goodness. This is a very detailed document.
And this is current family addresses and phone numbers right here. And it's not all inclusive. There's some I'm missing. This is our family's addresses, cousins in Ireland at Garnish, Leigh and Moore. And,
very good. So you have
so
Nora's,
we can trace them back and forth.
Patrick Harrington. Terence Lowney, Dennis Lowney, and they're all in Garnish.
Garnish, Leigh and Moore.
Castletown Bear.
And some of them, like Dennis is working in Dublin at the present time.
So, yeah.
But he still has a house there.
Very
at
good.
Garnish. And
what's the
anyway,
Skibbereen number here?
Well, that's just the bishop's information over there when I was doing the genealogical research.
Uh-huh.
This is another side of our family, the Sullivans.
I'm Sullivan on my mother's side.
Oh.
Donovan and back to Barry and back to Sullivan.
All right.
So we're probably related to
probably
each other.
Are. And a lot of them have moved out to the state of Washington. Earl Sullivan was the patriarch that lived here. And anyway, there's some of this is incomplete, but I put it in there. We get to complete it. Now, these are interesting photographs. I'm sure you're going to have me go into my father's history because that's really the centerpiece of our family story. But this is a photograph of my dad.
He's
the little
one? The middle of this. This is a photograph of...
And this is in 1923. He was born in 1913, so he's actually 10 years old at the time. At 5 years old, he started raising himself because his parents were dead by shining the miner's shoes on the streets of Butte for a nickel. And the Dublin Gulch football team, professional football team from Dublin Gulch, kind of took him under their wing.
Were they an American football team or a Gaelic Irish football team?
No, American football. American football.
Right.
And they kind of looked after him along the way. And so he was their mascot, and they were his mentors or whatever you want to call them. And then coming up to, I think this is 1931.
Oh, that's a beautiful photograph.
This is the Butte Central football team. My dad, Jerry Lowney, is right there. Our family has always been known for being short, thin, but extremely fast.
Yeah.
Of course, as we get older, the thin doesn't kind of goes away. But that's what he was too. Was an extremely fast runner.
Oh,
this one right here.
Look at him.
And of course, a very famous athlete came out of that squad, Jerry Lyons. Fish Lyons, they called him.
Fish Lyons.
Went on to play. I don't know exactly how far his career extended, but he was, you know, on the national level of football.
My goodness.
And this coming down, I played for University of San Diego, and then this is my son, Sean. And Sean had a full-ride scholarship out in Longview, Washington for Wazoo. And his senior year of high school, he blew out both of his shoulders. He would be their running back right at the present time, probably.
Oh, the poor kid.
Yeah, so that was a little bit of disappointment. But again, small but very fast.
Yeah.
And this is just a card that has all the Butte nicknames listed. And of course, my eyes are too bad to read that, but my dad is in there somewhere, Nickel Juror or QP Lowney. He had Nickel Juror when he was young, shining the minor shoes for a nickel. And then as he got older, he became known as QP Lowney.
Fantastic. There are some great names in here.
Balls. Oh.
Broken Arse Duggan.
Yeah, that's, I like that one too. Oh, you wouldn't believe. Say, there's many more than that that are on that card.
Pooch, Monk, Peachy,
Samansky.
Buckshot, Fish. Oh, fantastic.
There's a guy who was my dad's, or his best friend's name, Redneck Kelly.
Yeah.
Friends all their lives.
My husband was Spud. People still refer to him as Spud. For sure, yeah.
Okay. And when they, when Redneck died, they had a hard time figuring out what his real name was.
Really?
He had gone by Redneck for so long.
Fantastic.
Anyway, well, that's just one of the few things that made it through my childhood. I didn't save a lot of my childhood memorabilia, unfortunately. But this was the Northwest Little League Championship baseball team. And I was, I think, 8 years old on the team. Little League went from 8 to 12 back then. The two little Judd boys were our mascots. One of them is a priest now in South America, works for the Marianos. This is one of my brothers, and I don't know which one, at his first communion. There was Lennis, Jury, David, and Ronnie. And this is either Lennis, Jury, or David. I don't know which one. And then this was my oldest brother, Lennis. And he died in a car accident when I was 3 years old. He was 25.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He had just put himself through college. He was in his first year of teaching in Hysham, Montana. Was coming, bringing two students to a science fair in Missoula, but they were going to come through Butte first. And was going by Laurel, and huge gust of wind just blew the car off the road.
Oh.
He got killed. The two students didn't get a scratch on him.
Oh.
And that's that's his high school graduation picture.
Oh, he was gorgeous.
And this is my Sarah and my Sean when they were younger. And that's my daughter Kelly playing the guitar. And this is Sarah's little boy, Gabriel Michael.
Oh.
He was just born. And her daughter, Trinity.
Oh, beautiful.
And one of my dad's cousins, Harp O'Neill, just his obituary, died just a couple of years ago here in Butte. Pictures of me at Skibbereen with the statue there, which I'm sure you're very familiar with.
And I'm familiar with Skibbereen now, all right.
And I'm standing off in the shadows there. So hard to find, but I love that statue. Yeah, that's the House of Ireland in San Diego. My parents were very big supporters, and we spent a lot of time, and I've performed a lot there at Balboa Park in San Diego.
I need to talk to you about your performances as well.
I'm actually going to get into that here. Probably more than you want to know.
I think maybe what we'll do is if you hang on to that, and then as we go through the interview,
sure.
There's something in particular you can show it to us, and then we'll pick up on anything we've left out at the end.
Sure, sure. Now this, the reason I included it is a view from 417 North Excelsior, which is where I grew up, the house I grew up in here in Butte on Excelsior
mm-hmm.
Street. It's a famous house because it's known as Mary McLean's house. And Mary McLean, when she was 16 years old in 1910, wrote a best-selling novel, top seller of the United States, and it was her autobiography of growing up here in Butte. It has some beautiful descriptions of Butte. As for Mary McLean, she was considered a women's livest, way above her time.
Mm-hmm.
I personally consider her possessed. If you read her book, I think you would agree. But anyway, we grew up in Mary McLean's house. This is birth certificates from, and baptismal certificates and marriage certificates, death certificates, dating back to Elihees, coming through my parents' marriage and things of that nature. And if I don't straighten this out, it's gonna rip. Montana. Certificates of baptism. Marriage things. Things from Catholic Church. I just threw everything in here. You
yeah,
can see it's a collage. So
impressive. Need you to come home and organize my papers for me.
Now these are more stuff from the Ancient Order of Hibernians.
What is this?
From Centerville. Your
name in Kent.
Yep. Welcome to take it out and look at it if you want.
Come across that document before.
It's from the South Dublin Volunteers.
Wow. How old do you think this is?
About 1910, Butte history. Oh, or, if you know, it was gotten here in Butte.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was sent from
Ireland.
Well,
if it was written in 1916, but I wonder when it was published. There's no publication date on this pamphlet. Wow. I'm sure that's a valuable piece of paper to have.
Yep.
Back in before I do any damage to it.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a lot of stuff like that in here. The Declaration of Independence. Anyway, there's all kinds of things
great.
Along that lines.
To have a look at that in more detail.
Just continues here. Same type of stuff. Feel free if you know any better way of preserving this stuff to put it in something better. That's kind of my resume for entertaining. So as you can
oh,
see,
great.
That's quite extensive. And it actually has letters of recommendation with it and things of that nature. And then at that point, I actually get into the performances.
Yes.
And I'll just flip through here.
And seeing as we're on that subject, when did you start performing, Kevin?
Oh, that's a hard question to answer, but really back in junior high and high school.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, you know, I started performing and just continued performing. It came piecemeal.
Yes.
Playing the drums and then playing the harmonica because it was an instrument I could take backpacking with me up in the mountains of Montana. Then being exposed to Irish music and singing that. And it grew over a long period of time. My hobby as I started traveling was going into Irish pubs, listening to Irish music, which I loved. Because I was from Butte and also because I was a seminarian at one point in time. When you're a seminarian, everybody needs to tell you an Irish Catholic priest joke, you know.
Yes.
So I had this whole barrage of them. And so I was sitting at the bar with band members and I performed with, you know, the Wolf Tones, the Dubliners, people like this.
Okay.
I started telling them jokes and they started inviting me up on stage. And then with my family's history being tied to Niall ni Libraic, Niall Lon, Niall the Nine Hostages,
yes.
King of Ireland, I made a little character, King of Ireland character, and,
yes.
and did a takeoff on that, and then would start sitting in on sessions after the pubs closed with
mm-hmm.
these musicians, and they would teach me things, and it just kind of grew over a long period of time.
Let's take this with us, sit down, and we'll start at the beginning
okay.
and see how far we get.
resuming the interview with Patrick Cook, videographer, is here as well, just in case you want to chime in, Patrick. I wanted to identify you there. So we're just resuming here with Kevin Lowney. So Kevin, as I explained in the radio interview we did earlier today, there's kind of a basic structure to this. Really, my questions are by way of prompts. If there's something you want to spend more time on, just go ahead. It doesn't have to be, you know, evenly distributed or anything like that.
Yeah, don't be afraid, though, if you need to cut me off. And
yeah, well, as I said, we can always come back. So,
sure.
But let's start with your background. If you could state again for me your name and where and when you were born.
Sure. My name is Kevin L. Lowney, and the L is actually wasn't taken until my confirmation. It's my brother Lennis's name. So I was born Kevin Lowney, March 1st, 1959, St. Patrick's Hospital, in Butte, Montana. My family resided at 417 North Excelsior at the time.
And how many siblings do you have?
There were 8 total in our family, so 5 boys, including me, and 3 girls.
And if you could list their names for me.
I sure can. My oldest brother was Lennis Lowney, and he died when I was 3 years old. He was born the day after Christmas. And my next oldest brother would be Jury, now Father Jury Lowney, teaches at Carroll College, 70 years old, the present. And then there was David Lowney, who died just a few years ago at the age of 63, buried here in Butte at Holy Cross Cemetery next to my parents and my brother Lennis. And then my brother Ron Lowney, Ronald Joseph Lowney, taught at Longfellow Elementary, 5th grade, for many years before he retired. Now he's taking care of his wife Judy, who has MS, lives here in Butte. And then the girls, of course, Cheryl being the oldest, and she's now Cheryl Pedersen, and she works down at Herberger's here in Butte. Then Charmaine Mackey, married a Finnish gentleman named Mackey, and she lives at 2804 Yale Street here in Butte, Montana, 494-7757. And last but not least, my sister Janine, who started off as a telephone operator here in Butte, worked her way up to be one of the heads of AT&T, and then the company collapsed, and she ended up back here in Butte as well. They all come back to Butte, you know.
Yes.
And she's about 10 years older than me, and then I strolled along the last of the bunch by quite a ways.
Yeah, same as myself. Yeah.
The baby of the family.
The baby, yeah. We're never allowed to forget it, are we?
No.
Tell me about your parents.
Well, I'll start off with my mother, who I make the statement of this, and I truly mean it. If my mother wasn't a saint, and I know all Irishmen may feel this way.
About their mothers, yes.
But if my mother wasn't a saint, saints don't exist. She was Rita Mahoney, born in Centerville. And she was born in 1919. Grew up in Centerville. Some friends of hers, Betty Kirks, who became Betty McGillen, Alice Downey. I don't know what Alice's maiden name was.
Alice's maiden name was Colts.
Was Colts, okay.
So she would have been my husband's grandmother.
All right, and they were best friends all their lives. She was an extremely generous person, kind. She always used to make statements she never liked to see anything or anybody suffer.
Who is this, your mother?
My mother, yeah. And she lived by that. If she had a dime to her name, that dime was yours as well as hers. And she always says there's good and bad in all people, and you just need to try to find the good. She was married at a very early age to my father, age 15, and had her first child by the age of 16, and stayed with my dad until he died in 1995, at the age of 82. And Anyway, they lived here in Butte. She never worked a day in her life, which, and I'm saying out in the workforce per se, she stayed home and raised her kids, mm-hmm. and was very proud of that. And my dad was very proud that he was able to supply her with the opportunity to do that. And I'm still of the belief that that's the way things should be. You know, women should be home with their children and men should be out working. And I guess my values are really came from my parents, and I almost don't match up with my generation. I'm part of their generation, I think, more than I am my generation. And their value system was definitely revolving around the Catholic Church. My mother was extremely Catholic. During Lent, went to Mass every single day, every year, oftentimes with Alice Downey.
Mm-hmm.
Her mother was named Mamie. And Mamie Sullivan, by the way, then Mahoney after she got married, was famous around Butte for her generosity. And she ended up taking care of, during the Depression and things of that, all my mother's uncles and things, and they all, it was like a great big boarding house that they lived in. And anybody needed anything, Mamie or Mame was right there. In the last part of Mamie's life, she suffered with strokes, and my mother and dad took Mamie into our house and took care of her.
And was Mamie born in Ireland?
And no, Mamie was born in the United States. My father's dad was born in Ireland, but Mamie's father was William Edward Albert Mahoney, and of course you never want to say Mahoney in Ireland.
No, Mahoney.
Because you sit on your Mahone. Anyway, Mahoney. And his father had an interesting story. He came over here in the 1860s, and of course there was all kinds of signs all over the United States, no Irish need apply. He ended up going into the Civil War. He played the Bodhran and Tin Whistle.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Lincoln's regimental band. He also fought at Gettysburg. And his best friend was a gentleman named Smith, who was also from Ireland. And he was a musician as well. And both of them made it through the entire Civil War unscathed. And they became explosive experts during the war in hopes to go use those explosive techniques against the British after the war. They were promised that there would be a Fenian Revolution by General Maher Cochrane after the war. It's never came to fruition. So William Edward Albert Mahoney made his way to Butte, Montana, and became one of the head blasting engineers on the Butte Hill for, well, really all three of the Copper Kings. That was his expertise. So that's on my mother's side of the family. The records back in Ireland are not readily available on their side of the family. There was a stay before they came to Butte also in Falls River, Massachusetts, where there's a lot of connection, people coming from West Cork to Falls River to Butte. So they didn't come as directly to Butte as my father's family. Now my father's family story, I guess I'll start back in Ireland. Part of the O'Sullivan Barra clan of West Cork, lived near Alahees at Leighan Moor. My great-great-grandparents were Mick and Peg Lowney. Peg was O'Sullivan Barrule, and they lived at Garnish, Leighan Moor, part of the Alahees Parish. They worked in the mines, they farmed, and they also fished. They had 11 children. My grandfather, his name was Jure Above, was one of their children. The reason he was called Jure Above was there was another Jerry Lowney who lived below the road, and they had to differentiate between the two of them. So he was Jure Above the road, and there was a Jure Below the road. And he was a blaster in the Alahees mines and decided to leave at some point and come make his way to Butte. Made his way to Butte, became a blaster here in the Butte mines. He met another Lowney on the Butte Hill. Didn't know her in Ireland, even though they didn't live that far away from each other. Her name was Mary Lowney.
Mm-hmm.
And they fell in love, got married, and she noticed Jerubov had a hard time breathing. Well, he had contracted the silicosis, the miner's lung. And so she talked him into borrowing money from the Clark's Brothers Bank and building a boarding house up in Dublin Gulch, which he did. And they were doing well for a while. They had five children. My dad was the last of the five. He continued to work in the mines to get the boarding house paid off.
Mm-hmm.
My dad was born in 1913, January 20th, 1913. And May 31st, 1913, just a few short months later, his father, Jerubov, died of the silicosis, miner's lung, miner's consumption. And so at that point, his mother Mary was raising the children at the boarding house. They had a house in the back of the boarding house where they stayed. And that house in the back of the boarding house caught fire.
Mm-hmm.
She got all her children out. My dad, age five, ran back inside to get his pet rabbits out. And she went in after him, and she got smoke inhalation. And died just a short time after that, at the age of, she was 48 years old when she died. And so my dad, the boarding house was repossessed by the Clark's Brothers Bank, and my dad and his siblings raised themselves on the streets of Butte. My dad specifically shined the miner's shoes for a nickel, and his brother John used to come up to him and say, "Hi, you got a nickel, Jer?" So he was known around the streets of Butte is Nickel Jer Lowney. The Dublin Gulch football team, which was a professional football team at the time, kind of comprised all Butte guys, by the way, took him under their wing and kind of helped raise him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
When he was 13 years old, he took St. Mary's Catholic School to the city championship. He was a quarterback, but he was known for the quarterback sneak and being a fast runner.
Yes.
And so when he went to work in the mines at age 15, which was common back then to go to work in the mines that young, they recognized him as a fast runner.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they chose the blasters. So they made a blaster out of
him. It's a family tradition, blasting.
It is. And the running part, by the way,
keeps
going down the lines. And anyway, back then, the fuses used to come in great big spools, and they were soaked in a very silky, powdery solution. I used to know the name of that, but I can't recall it right now. That would make them burn real slow,
mm-hmm.
1 foot per minute. And they used to cut the fuses in 3 foot sections, so when you lit the fuse, you had 3 minutes to run. Unfortunately, my dad got part of a fuse from the center of the spool, which the solution did not reach, so it was an untreated fuse, they called it. And so as soon as he lit the fuse, he's only 15 years old at the time, explosion takes place immediately.
Mm-hmm.
They found him 1,000 feet below in the next level of the mine. The Butte mines are go on 1,000-foot sections. And he was covered in rock. They dug him out, rushed him to the old St. James Hospital, which is down there on Washington and Mercury Street. And they pronounced him dead on arrival. They were waiting for the undertaker to come and get the body and the priest to come over and give him last rites or what have you. And one of the nuns, and I'm not sure if it was a Sister of Charity of Leavenworth or one of the BVMs anyway, one of the nuns was saying a prayer over what she thought was a dead body, and he breathed. And he was unconscious for the next 11 days, but he went on to live to be 82 years old, had 8 kids. I'm the last of the 8. And he died in San Diego, California in 1995. By the way, he went on to be he went on to become the head hoist engineer on the Butte Hill and trained a lot of the hoist engineers around Butte. Most of which have died off by now, or a lot of them dying off, but you know, the old people will remember John T. Shea and people like that.
Yeah.
Kevin Shannon will know my dad. Tom O'Cahy, who's, you're probably going to interview. My
yes.
dad got Tom O'Cahy's his first job. It was ironic that we ended up in San Diego down with Tom O'Cahy, and Tom used to get his Padres tickets.
Oh.
And anyway, so there was a Butte connection that ended up together down in San Diego a little bit.
Yeah.
So that's my dad's history.
So he survived smoke inhalation and a fire at 5, and he survived the explosion in the mine at 15.
Right.
My goodness. Somebody was looking out for him.
And then he survived us 8 children.
Yeah. That's probably the biggest
thing. And if you know some
actually.
Of my brothers and sisters, that would be pretty hard to survive.
Yeah, whatever about your father, your mother surviving the age, that's the key thing.
That's the hard part.
Yeah. So tell me about your dad's ancestry then. You were talking earlier that it was your that the line of Irish heritage comes mostly from your father's side, or the recognition of it.
Well, the recognition of it, the documentation of it. Should I start ancient and come forward, or forward and come ancient?
Yeah, the first date in your book is 1700 BC, but we're not going to start there.
Okay, I'm going to start on the other direction. Mick and Pig were my grandfather's parents, and they had settled at Lee and Moore from, were part of the O'Sullivan Barra clan, and specifically the O'Sullivan Barra clan that lived on the Tuerlan River
mm-hmm.
in County Kerry. And of course, their most famous person who were a descendant of there would have been Niall Lon, which is where the Lowney name comes from, the Tuerlan River, I believe it is, the River of Endless Sleep there. And we were the O'Sullivan Barras that lived on that river, the Lons.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the EY is a derogatory put on by the British when they conquered us. It's my understanding any EY on an Irish name is a derogatory when the names were anglicized.
Mm.
So we're really, my true name is Uvin Lon O'Sullivan Barra, not Kevin Lowney, but
right.
that's who people know you by, so that's why you continue to go by
yeah.
a derogatory name. They came to that part of Ireland because they were the bigger part of the O'Sullivan Barra clan. And as you know, the O'Sullivan Barra clan, Castletown Barra, it was their castle that was invaded in 1601 by the British, chased 1,200 of the O'Sullivan Barra clan across Ireland. I think 35 survived, 34 men, one woman. Then they went on to the small castle, the British did, on Jersey Island. And my family's land over there overlooks Jersey Island. And of course, there was a smaller castle on Jersey Island where the pregnant women, women with little children, people who were too old to fight, the sickly, anybody who couldn't really fight was hiding in that castle.
And this was in 1600.
And this was in 1601. And they went in and, without being gruesome about it, they basically slaughtered all the people in that castle and then went on to the monastery and decapitated the clergy, because the British government would actually pay money for their heads. So my family's land looked over all of that. And of course they would have survived those, you know, harsh years of the potato blight and the British penal laws
mm-hmm.
and things of that nature. I could pull out the specifics. Do you want me to read their names and parishes and things of that nature?
If you could give me the dates of when they came to America, or if you have that information.
That I cannot give you. But let's see here. Let me just read through this.
Do.
You can delete it. If
no, please do.
Okay. The Launay Bunskillig. Launays in Bearhaven were originally O'Sullivans who came from beside the Lawn River, pronounced Laun. Killer County Kerry. They were called the Launays after coming to Bearhaven, and they eventually became known as the Launays. The four brothers came, one settled at Bunskillig, one at Bear Island, one at Clogheen, and one at Garnish. And the fourth, a weaver, settled in Aries. Yeah, okay, so we're going to jump forward. Cornelius Launay and Catherine, or Coit Murphy. Catherine was from, I'm having a hard time pronouncing this one, D-E-R-R-I-M-I-H-A-N, Durham.
Let me have a look. Durham.
Durham.
Yeah.
Bridget married Jarrah Maya Murphy,
mm-hmm.
son of Sean Murphy, and Nora Kelly, Colleen, Aries Parish, and May of 1842. Cornelius Launay and Honora O'Neill. Honora was from Dereham, daughter of Margaret, September 1855. Settled in a home place and married
Cleonestock,
Dan Murphy, son of Patty Moore Murphy and Margaret Murphy, and
Ross McCallan,
in 1857.
It's amazing that you have all this material.
Yeah, well, it's what's the book called?
Is it Robert O'Dwyer?
Yes, Robert O'Dwyer. So he's the real one who did all the research there. And Mick Launay and Peg Launay. Mick, brother of Dennis Launay. And Dennis, by the way, is where my cousins in Ireland shoot off from.
Mm-hmm.
Liam Moore married John Harrington Quaybuck, the big lazy lout. For any of you Irishmen out there, if you have Quaybuck in your last name, it means big lazy lout. I just want you to know that now. Or son of Cornelius Launay and Mary Sewell Sullivan of Clogheen. Peg was the daughter of Dan Sullivan Barule and Catherine Driscoll of Clogheen. Mick and Peg had 11 children. And then it lists them. John, 1851, went to Newport, Rhode Island. He is still living there in 1916. Mary... Okay, I guess I got cut off right here. And... then I didn't list all the children.
Goes on from there,
just,
yeah.
I just took Jerabov, who was one of the 11 children.
So he was born in Garnish.
He was born, yeah, in Garnish. And I have his baptism and birth certificate in there.
So let me jump forward a little bit, Kevin, if I may.
Sure.
To so you grew up the youngest of 8 children here in Butte.
Yes.
And your father was pretty much... as you described him as bringing himself up from the age of 5.
Right.
Now, obviously, he had the support of a community. You mentioned the football game and so forth, and his siblings and so
mm-hmm.
on. But nonetheless, that's an extraordinary challenge for somebody so young to have to deal with.
Absolutely.
What was it like growing up in your house? I mean, I guess my question is that the Irish heritage and its significance to you and to your family seems, from what you've said so far, to be very strong. How did that survive in somebody who was effectively orphaned so young?
A lot of rough edges there, my dad.
Yeah.
You know, there was some hard parts to get along with.
Yeah.
You know, he was a hard man to work with. And... if my dad wasn't at work, he was working on the house, and he wanted you working there with him.
Right.
And, of course, I was the last of the children, so I was taught by my older siblings all the ways of getting out of the work, which I much regret, because there was some things in carpentry and plumbing and electrical work and working on the car and things of that nature that I got myself out of I wish I had that knowledge.
Mm. That generation was amazing, wasn't it?
Oh.
I shouldn't interrupt, but my father was the same. He could turn his hand to anything.
Yeah,
just
they,
and it was necessity in a lot of cases, because they just had to make things
absolutely, Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we grew up in a very old, big house. And, but my dad had, you know, all the best wiring and copper plumbing, and he just put everything into that house because it was, you know, that's where his children lived. And, you know, his love went into that work. And I guess that's the way my dad expressed his love. My dad was not a hugger. He loved you by working. And it was funny when my children came along and I experienced a divorce and ended up in a joint relationship because my parents were getting older, where I took care of them and they helped me out with my children. And my children were very loving. You couldn't not hug my children.
I know.
And they taught my dad a whole new way of life, you know, the affectionate part. and oh, there's some funny things that went in with that that I don't even know if I could get into. Well, one of the things I remember is my son would wake up in his crib, and my dad always got up at 6 in the morning, no matter how old he was. And my son decided 6 in the morning was the time Grandpa got up, and they shared a room together. And so it was time to eat. So at 5 to 6, my son would just wake up, start flipping the light on and off. Up, Papa. Eat, Papa. Eat, Papa. So my dad would wake up, put him in the high chair, get him something to eat. And as soon as he did, and my son got the food in front of him, no, Papa. He was going to fight with Papa. So Papa was grouchy.
Yeah.
But Papa spent a lot of time taking my kids to the playgrounds and things of that nature. And, you know, my mother as well. She was a mother to my children.
Yeah.
And, you know, that may, you know, some of my siblings thought, well, that's a burden at their old age. Mm. But, you know, it was the best thing that ever happened to both of them. Best thing that ever happened to my kids, but it was also the best thing that ever happened to my parents. It kept them going, and it gave them someone to continue to love and a purpose for living. Growing up in my house, you know, I'm hoping you will interview some of my siblings, because there's such a disparity in age between, you know, my oldest and second oldest brother and me. It would be like we grew up in different households. My brother, Father Jerry Lowney, imagine if I put the entire amount of time in my lifetime that I've spent in his presence, it's probably less than 72 hours. Because he was gone at a very early age. And he actually left at age 13 to go to be a priest at one point in his life. But he didn't become a priest at that point. He dropped out. But he was gone out of our house before I was there. And I was the last of eight by a long way. So in a sense, I was, my experience was like being a only child with a bunch of parents, you know, my siblings being the parents. They still think they're the parents. they described their experiences in our household, you know, being in a household with seven children all there at one time. Competing for the resources of the household, something totally different than I experienced. And in a sense, maybe materially, I was spoiled a little bit when I was younger. I had more because there was more to have and wasn't competing with all the different people. But I think they have some richer experiences, you know, having the sibling relationships that I didn't have in some ways.
Yeah. And what's the age gap, did you say, between you and
Well, my brother Jerry is the second oldest, and he's 70.
That's
21. My oldest brother died when I was 3 years old, and he was 26 at the time. So, what is that? I'm 51. So, 23 plus 51 is 74 years old he'd be.
Yeah.
So, 74 to 51.
That's 23. So he would have been 23 years old. So your next brother was 21 years older than you.
Right.
The one of Jerry who survived.
Yeah, so
the one who's the eldest who's living, if you like.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, 20. He would have been 20 years older.
And what is the age gap between you and the youngest of your siblings?
10 years.
Ten years. So right. And so you were quite alone then, in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, they were still around for a while, but I was seeing them move out.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. By the time I started.
Was there much about your Irish heritage in your house growing up?
Very definitely. I mean, the Butte community is very proud of their Irish heritage. And we had connections with my cousins in Cork. And I will say that there were, although I think our family was a little bit closer than most in Butte to maintaining a reality of what was going on in Ireland at any one given time. Even within our family, and definitely within the larger Butte Irish community, were some misconceptions, for lack of a better way of putting them, of, you know, Irish history and, you know, what took place. And we didn't know everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to learn. My Irishness, I guess, is what I'm trying to get across, has been a lifelong learning, not just a childhood learning,
mm-hmm.
but it continues, and I'm still learning today.
Mm-hmm.
I don't claim to know everything about Ireland, and I'm still learning, and I love that,
yes.
You know, yeah, that I'm still learning.
Yeah. And Ireland is changing so much, too.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
But I do find, how do I say this? A false pride in the Butte people. They're so proud to be Irish, but a lot of them really don't know that much about Ireland and its culture and its history and their own family history, and a lot of misconceptions and just proud for not really knowing why they're proud, I guess is.
In terms of your concept of your Irishness, you've traveled to Ireland, haven't you?
Extensively, yes.
Tell us about your time in Ireland.
Well, first of all, my cousins live out still in Garnish, Lehamore, West Cork. They have a house that overlooks Bald Head, the Jersey Island, Garnish. It's very much a rural place, Slieve Muskish. Mountains in the background, the fog rolls in off the seashore that they're overlooking, great big waves crashing on the rocks there. The house that they is currently the family house. They're all moving out,
mm-hmm.
by the way. There's only one of my cousins still live there and takes care of his sibling who's disabled, and their mother's in a rest home now. That was built in the 1950s, so it's a fairly modern house. The house that my grandfather would have left sits right in back of that. And it's just simply, you know, it's just amazing you call it a house because it's a shale room with a thatched roof that's about twice the size of this room. And to have 11 children, two parents living in there, just amazing to me.
Mm-hmm.
The walls are about that thick shale. I actually have a piece of that shale out in my car, by the way. I have a rock from the Barra copper mines. I have a rock from the Castletown Barra Castle. But anyway, the shale wall is about that thick, and, you know, just held together with some type of mud cement concoction, heated by a peat moss fire in the winter. I don't know how they kept warm.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's good to have 11 of them in there. And it's now used to house the sheep,
mm-hmm.
by the way. When you walk into the house in Ireland, you immediately feel welcome. One of the interesting things, for a period of time in my life, I was a trainer for the Schwann's Home Food Delivery Service.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my job to go to train Schwann's drivers who go to houses, 120 houses a day, and I did this all over the United States. And I could always tell you when I entered an Irish Catholic house, and it wasn't because there was a crucifix on the wall or anything else, it was just by the way you were greeted, the spirit of the dwelling place itself. And that's definitely there in my cousin's house, and I felt welcome there like I had felt welcome in Alice Downey's house here in Butte, mm-hmm. our house, you know, the O'Neill's house, many of the houses here in Butte. There's just a warming, welcoming feeling. I used to drive my cousin nuts because his mother had what to me was the most interesting old Irish stories to tell, and about their side of the family.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd always beg her to tell me those, and she'd tell them in depth and detail, and I just loved them. My cousin, meanwhile, was nudging me to get me out of there because he had heard these 10,000 times before. I was sick of listening to them.
When did you first travel to Ireland?
Oh, I was about in the ninth grade. So
what age is that?
Probably about 13, 14, somewhere around there.
Did you travel with your family?
No, my first trip over there was by myself, and went over there to actually help my cousins do some work, and there were some transitions taking place. My dad was ill at that particular time in our family, and it was a good for everybody concerned, and it was a learning experience.
And you went to your cousin. How long did you?
I stayed there for a semester of school, so about 6 months, I'd say it was.
My goodness. So at the age of 13,
mm-hmm.
you lived in Ireland for 6 months.
Right.
What did that feel like?
Terrifying at first.
Yeah.
Horribly terrifying. But that went away right, real quick.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of fun.
And did you go to school over there?
Yes. The small school right there on,
my goodness,
it's down the road on Garnish.
Yeah. And so what was that like?
Well, it was, you know, it was like stepping out the front door and going down the block, first of all.
Yeah, yeah.
So it wasn't that far away. And
but coming from the American school system at that age and going into an Irish rural school.
Well, I had a hard time understanding what the hell they were saying. But I felt very welcomed, and I was kind of the person of interest.
Yes.
You know, because I was different.
Yeah.
At the same time, you know, you had to prove yourself with the boys physically, especially at that age. And at that age, I was pretty much able to do so. So,
mm-hmm.
so it was actually, you know, I think if our family, by the way, and this may have been going back into my father's and grandfather's history, we mature very young. I was shaving in the sixth grade.
Mm-hmm.
Had the fifth fastest time in the nation for the 100-yard dash when I was in the sixth grade. But we're almost at our full strength at that age, at 12, 13, 14. So I was a pretty tough kid.
Yeah.
And then coming from the Butte, we're the tough guys.
Yes.
I think I had an easy time of it. Had I not been as physically ready for the challenge, I think it might have been a little bit of a different experience for me. So.
And at that age, living in an Irish household, were there differences from your own household?
You know, I'm going to say for me, yes. Because, and it gets back, but I don't think it would have been for my siblings. And again, I was... Growing up at my house, I was kind of the last of the eight, and I don't think I had as many chores or responsibilities as my siblings did growing up. So, and I'd learned how to get out of work with my father. So I guess one of the differences over there was, and I think this is part of the reason I got sent over there, was to learn how to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it wasn't just dust the coffee table. It was go shovel the sheep manure. And, you know, things of that nature. It was more of a rural lifestyle.
Yeah.
So.
My goodness. And you said you've been over there extensively.
Back and forth over the years. And, you know, I never kept any track of specific
mm-hmm.
time or things back and forth. But, yeah, I've been back and forth.
So your education, obviously, you were educated in Ireland for 6 months at a crucial time of learning. Tell us about going to school here in Butte. Did you go to an Irish school?
Yeah, Well, this is kind of an interesting part of Butte history. I started off with the IC, which is the Immaculate Conception Church, run by the Sisters of Charity in Leavenworth. And I'll have to say, and if any of them ever watch this, I am so thankful for the work that the Sisters of Charity of Leavenworth have done here in Butte with the hospitals and teaching here in Butte, the Catholic school system. Now, when I was in the fifth grade, and this was another thing that had connection with going to Ireland, kind of started the whole ball of wax being talked about me going over there. When I was in the fifth grade, the Catholic school system shut down here. They ran out of money, just didn't have the money. And so I went to McKinley, which is just down the hill street here on Park Street. And, you know, I'm going to tell you right off the bat, having come from a Catholic environment to a non-Catholic environment, the kids at McKinley, and I'm talking fifth grade, were doing a lot of bad things that would never have been thought about in a Catholic school. And this is back then. So I was exposed to some rotten behavior going from a Catholic school to a public school. Luckily, I was able to get back into the Catholic school during junior high, and they opened North Central, which was the IC, became a, not a middle, they didn't call them middle schools back then, but junior highs, and was able to, you know, go there. And again, the nuns that taught us there, they were all PhDs. And I can remember Sister Lois, she was from Chicago, Italian. Her dad was in the mafia, very devout nun, had us come up here to Montana Tech and go over to the Mineral Museum, and we had to memorize every mineral in that place. And one of our final was, she picked five rocks and we had to tell her what they were and their chemical breakdown. That knowledge carried me all the way through Montana Tech. Mm-hmm. They were extremely good teachers, and they stressed discipline. Mm-hmm. Oh, what our kids today need most of all. And they told parents up front, you know, we expect the biggest thing that your kids are going to learn here is discipline and self-discipline. And I would say those years with the nuns really carried me through the rest of my life in a lot of ways. I went to Butte High because, instead of Central, and it was because Central cost some money, and my parents were getting older and retired by that point in time, and there wasn't a lot of money in our household. Mm-hmm. So I chose to go to Butte High, even though they would have let me go to Central, but to save them some money.
Yeah.
And Butte High was a good school back then. I'd have to say a lot better than it is now. And I have a daughter who, she's living with her mom down in California right now, but she was at Butte High just last year, and I'm just appalled, shocked, and sickened by the moral climate at Butte High School. And if any other Butte parents hear this, you better start going to school and see what's going on, because it isn't what you think it is. So anyway, when I went to school at Butte High, though, it was a good place. And Butte was a different place. You know, our population hadn't shrunk to where it is now because the mines were still running. I graduated from high school in 1978. Mm-hmm. And when we played sports, we were expected to win. Don't come back into town with a loss, boy.
Yeah.
And we did. You know, Butte terrorized the rest of the state of Montana in sports because nobody could beat us. Well, now we can't win a game, but
yeah.
You know, our population shrunk.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just the population also changed. The kids that you were going to school with, you know, their parents had come through those testing grounds of working in the mines, and mm-hmm. and it was only the strong that survived. And the kids nowadays, of course, you know, what does your dad do for a living? He's a computer engineer or something of that nature. So we had a different mix of people. I think we infuriated the rest of the state because we were all these small Irishmen, and we'd go to these places where they had the big Swedes, and we'd beat the hell out of them in football and things of that nature. It's a very great childhood growing up here in Butte. And when I'll tell you, it was really a gift from God, having the parents I had, having the Catholic community I had, living in the growing up in the time period of the United States before everything kind of collapsed and fell apart. I'm just tremendously thankful for that. On the other hand, there's a tremendous sadness in me because I have watched the fall of the United States, so to speak, from my point of view, the fall of Butte. Butte specifically, when everything closed down in 1982, I was studying mining engineering up here at Montana Tech, and you could walk down the street and every other car was for sale, every other house was for sale. For the most part, the good, hard-working people left Butte. Our middle class left. It was only the rich elite and the older people who had some money who were able to really stay here in Butte. Most of Butte left. And maybe people on the other end of the scale, too, who had nothing, were able to stay. But the working class person, for the most part, left Butte in 1982. And I was one of them.
Right.
And my
so
family.
You came out with a mining degree?
No, I actually, because of that, stopped studying that field because my plans was to stay working with the Anaconda Company, who I was working with Alice Downey as a janitor for the Anaconda Company at the time. I was going to, hopefully use that mining engineering degree to stay here in Butte and work in the mines here. I had no desire to go work in a mine in South America or something like that. And anyway, I ended up going to the University of San Diego and graduating with a business degree from the University of San Diego. With, in between that period of time, a year of thinking about the priesthood, studying religious studies and philosophy.
And so tell me a little bit about your career then. On graduation, did you stay in San Diego or did you come back to Montana?
Stayed in San Diego for the most part. Graduated with a business degree from the University of San Diego in 1984. Ended up at first in retail management. Managed the Woolworth store in downtown Seattle, which was a very interesting place. Woolworth's was the Five and Dime in the downtown area, and our store was open long hours. We'd have the business people during the day and then the criminal element at night in downtown Seattle. So the place, the makeup of your customers would totally change night to day. I was in charge of a large number of employees at a very young age, age 27, I think I was when I left there. A lot of responsibility. Woolworth's was not computerized, and so it was a learning period of retail from the nuts, literally nuts and bolts, on up and how to retail without being computerized. So it was a very good teaching process for how to retail merchandise and buy and things of that nature and manage. Went on from there into the art business, Simic Galleries, where a very exclusive art gallery where I was dealing with presidents, celebrities, selling artwork. Started off at $5,000, went up into the millions, and dealing with an extremely wealthy class of people in that area. And I'm kind of putting the entertainment on the sideline here because this is all kind of growing simultaneously. And
your work as a musician.
Yeah, and I'm putting that in the background here because that's going on at the same time. Mm-hmm. But you have your night job and the music and your day job. So day job I'm focusing on a little bit here.
Yeah.
Eventually ended up, and I'm skipping parts here, but went to work for Schwann's Home Food Delivery Service based out of Marshall, Minnesota. I was with them for 9 years, and they are a house-to-house food delivery service. And I worked my way up from the bottom of that company all the way to the top, and I was national trainer for them. And this is, that was really where my entertaining flourished, because I was traveling the whole United States. Schwann's was paying my hotel rooms and foods, and I was in a different location every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So I was able to schedule gigs in wherever I was going to be going, and the pub owners didn't have to pay for my lodging or meals, and so I could give them a fair price to perform. So,
or your transport.
Well, my transport and everything. So Schwann's was kind of supplementing my entertaining as well.
When did you start playing?
Well, again, I started back in junior high, and it grew. So it's hard to put an exact time on it. And, you know, rather than use the term playing, by the way, what I consider myself is a comedian first and a singer second.
Right. So performing, I
performing.
Guess.
And then I play a few other instruments, but mm-hmm. That's my main thing. So I call myself an entertainer mm-hmm. first. And the difference I find between an entertainer and a musician, I find a lot of people who may be the greatest guitar player in the world, and they could sit down and play the guitar for hours in front of you, but they're quite boring. I pride myself on being able to step in front of a group of people, capturing their attention and keeping it and making them have fun, ill regardless of my talent or lack thereof, for a long period of time.
You mentioned earlier that you'd performed with the Chieftains and the Wolftones. That's fairly a high profile company to be keeping.
Right.
Tell me how some of that came about.
Well, Wolftones, Kieran's Pub in 2nd Street in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I was scheduled there to do some comedy, and so I was the comedy act, and they were the band, and it was one of those things where it worked in, we established a good rapport, and then ended up on stage together by the end of the weekend. Dubliners, same thing, in Dublin, Grafton Street. Actually wrote a song that you're familiar with for them, and I'm going to share that information off camera if I may.
Okay.
I gave them a song that they took and published, and they didn't do it purposely to do anything underhanded, but I'd given them my information, and they just simply forgot where it came from. So anyway, one of the things that I've found is the more talented the musician, mm-hmm. the easier it is to just jump on stage and perform with them, because they can adjust to your faux pas.
Yeah.
So
when you perform, are there particular Irish songs that you perform as part of your set?
Mm-hmm. I would say there's a whole list of them. I'll just rattle some of them off, I guess. Mo Gilamar is one of my favorite songs to sing in Gaelic. I don't know why I'm drawing a blank right now on Irish music. And actually, do you mind if we take a break for just a second?
Oh, yeah.
We'll come back to that question. I know I'm drawing a blank because my blood sugar is getting low. I'm kind of running out of steam here.
Hang on. It's still flashing.
Good. Just hit the record again.
So we were talking about Irish music.
Oh, yeah. So what are some of the songs I do? Well, there's a lot of them, first of all. One of my favorite ones is in Gaelic is Mo Gilamar. Are you familiar with that one? And, of course, all the old Rebel songs. Rising of the Moon, Johnny, I Hardly Knew Ya. And of course, some of the real old songs that the Butte people enjoy the most, things like Molly Malone. But all the, I'd say any old traditional Irish music is what I'd love and what I'd love to sing.
You mentioned the other day, earlier, when we did the radio interview, the Field of Athenry.
Yeah.
Could you give us a verse?
Sure. By lonely prison walls, I heard a young girl calling, Michael, they are taking you away, for you stole Trevelyan's corn, so the young might see the morn. Now there's a prison ship lies waiting in the bay. Low lie the fields of Athenry, where once we watched the small free birds fly. Our love was on their wings, we had dreams and songs to sing. Now it's so lonely round the fields of Athenry.
Beautiful.
Should I do my favorite one?
Do your favorite one.
Bim shir bu na buesh na glo a qui go cru sa tu na nor mas quella gum en bo qui vo ish na rim fa tu rish we mo bron she mo leg mo gil na mar she mo heis a gil na mar sun na shein ni voris hen o creek again mo gil na mar ba i fen creek go square non to e fiur que nus la hua is fort to e chi su e buer ta chi bron o squel la hugum in bo kil bo she mo leg mo gil mar she mo heis a gil mar sun na shein ni voris hen o cruig i gein mo gil mar la canul cyr na var na fort la felgis fiun ta fion ma cro la cancord cua na nis na nos O tishaki and craven crows, shame o lake, mo gil na mar, shame o haze a gil na mar, sun na shen, ni vores hen, o creaky gain. Thank you. You know, there are two songs that actually fit kind of with the family history I've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to hear them?
Yes, please.
They're short. This first one I actually wrote in my cousin's house, Leamore Garnish, and it's about that area. Like the rain that falls upon my homeland, like the waves that crash on Erin's shore, like the mist that rolls in from the ocean, my heart gently rests at Leinmore. and my love remains on Erin's shawl. You know what? Can you start that one over?
Yep.
I did something that's common. I'm still lost in the other melody.
Oh, yeah, I was just thinking as you shifted from one to the other.
Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a different song first
okay.
to get that melody out of my head.
How about you do the Irish National Anthem because you wanted to take it again?
Okay.
Yeah, that'll get you out of it.
That will. All right. Sin a fin a fal a ta fi al e geren win a shlor a tin a ra di coi vi voet vers yer shanti a shin she faster ni al fast quin trir a laur fin troil a no da hain sa buan a buel La gonya quake and bash no sail, La gony scrive, we lower hopefully. Shall the conic aron of like the rain that falls upon my homeland. Like the waves that crash on Erin's shore, like the mist that rolls in from the ocean, my heart gently rests at Leighan Moor, and my love remains on Erin's shore. My fathers fought and died for freedom. They worked the rock that lies beneath the ground. They tilled the soil that lies above it, and fished the ocean that does surround. And their love for Ireland doth abound. And their hearts remain at Leighan Moor, and their love it rests on Erin's shore. When my days are finally over, and my life is but a forgotten era, I will be laid with the ardry of this holy ground, and I will rise with you, princes of Bera, and our love for Ireland shall resound, and my heart will rest at Leighan Moor, and my love remain on Erin's shore.
Beautiful.
And do one more, should we, and then call it a day?
Yeah.
This song I wrote for my mother. She died January 7th, 2004. And I wrote it the night she died. Sung it at her wake, actually. It goes, there's a rose that lasts forever, that lasts forever in my heart. She's a wild rose, she's a soft rose, she has thorns to fight the devil, she has beauty to praise the Lord, and her prayers Go with the children, that their faith may be restored. I watched her grow, I watched her bloom. Then I slowly watched her wilt, as she laid a bed of petals for her children, like a quilt. She's a red rose in her passion, she's the white rose of purity. She's the blue rose of compassion, and she's the rose God gave to me. There's a rose that lasts forever, that lasts forever in my heart.
That was a lovely send-off to give her. It's beautiful.
Yep. So, you want to schedule for next Wednesday or Wednesday after?
What we'll do is we'll wrap up today, but we will conclude this interview at a later date.